Not a lot, really. I mean, I'm sure individually people have been thinking about it, but I don't think there's a strategy or strategic plan. That's what I'm hoping we'll find out today.
Right. I mean, we're working on a antagonist pharmacology, I guess, is our general aim. And we've done more specific stuff, but in terms of strategy, Michael's talked, but I have not talked with you guys since Washington.
Have you talked about inviting Kathy Sulick?
I have not specifically brought that up. I don't think Michael has either.
Okay.
She was one of the names that was discussed at one of our meetings, but not to a point where, you know, he said, let's do it.
Hello.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you? Charlie?
Hi, Michael.
Hey, who else is here?
Ed.
Hey, good.
And Ken, I think.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Warren's here. Is Lori there? Nope.
All right, we'll wait. We may get a couple more.
Jennifer will be here later.
I'm pretty sure Feng Zhou's going to be calling in, too.
Okay, just hold for one sec.
And how's the RFA coming along?
Susan tells me it's moving.
Okay.
Susan, are you on? No. I thought she was going to be on.
We should talk about that, too, at some point.
I'm waiting. I'm still waiting to see it. Susan and Lori have been working on it. So I have not even seen it yet.
Well, we've been discussing structural strategies and to run some of these by you guys to see what you think might or might not fly.
Ed, I was wondering if you have a sense at this point as to how many clinical projects there would be and how many cores there would be.
I'd like to get cores down to just the administrative core and the informatics core, and basically run the pilot project core within the administrative core, and basically try to be mean and lean and put the money in the projects. So even if a project had a core component, that it would also have its own research project so that it could be a U01 rather than a U24.
Which makes a lot of sense, and I think that the follow-up point is that we should probably put in as many basic science and clinical projects as we can think of, because there's going to be some attrition through the review process, and the review process itself is going to help us end up with the best projects.
So you're of the opinion they can't reject everything?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. I have a somewhat different view, which is that we would benefit from the review process.
Right. I think that's a more productive viewpoint.
Well, I really believe it, that I think it'll help shape the consortium in a positive direction. We get a panel of experts who are going to be thoughtful about this and give us a perspective that is outside what we've been so close to. So although it's a lot of work to write one of these things, I think that if we are guided by the principle that either a basic science or a clinical part of the consortium uniquely addresses a goal of the consortium and relates in obvious ways to other elements of the consortium, if the science is good and the relatedness is obvious, I think it's a worthy project to fund. And I predict that in the end, we will not have more worthy projects that fulfill all of those criteria than the funding is going to allow. We'll just hopefully end up with the best ones.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience running PPGs, you want to not expand too much because then people end up with not enough money.
Right.
On the other hand, you want enough projects, so if the minimum necessary gets through the funding process.
Well, there will be a financial cap, and
right.
What we want to do is to utilize that money to fund the best science that is...
Hi, Fong. Just on board.
Hi, Fong.
Hi.
Hi, Fong.
That's Steve Fung. Hi.
Science.
Hi.
All right. So, Michael, you're going
to... Yes, I'm here, and I hope to be uninterrupted during this hour.
Okay.
Great.
So I'm just going to summarize some of the ideas that we've had so far. I'm not going to start with our meeting in Washington, but we've had a number of ideas submitted. Fung had a proposal that integrates work that he showed us in preliminary form at our last meeting, looking at facial morphology with the work that's going on with the facial morphology group in the consortium. And that's one germ of a project. We are, Keith and my group have been meeting and looking at the possibility of doing something that is very basic, but also will, if it's successful, accelerate our mission of trying to identify drugs that can be protective in fetal alcohol syndrome, and that is that we're going to attempt to crystallize L1 and three-dimensional map of the binding site of an antagonist so that ultimately we can do high-throughput screening of compounds or even design of compounds. That's a second potential project. Jennifer Thomas.
She's just walked in the door.
Oh, all right. Hi, Jennifer.
So she's just walked in the building door.
Oh, okay. All right.
Here in a minute.
I'll say hi when she gets on.
Wow, your surveillance is very good, Ed.
I have cameras all over the building.
Jennifer was proposing to expand on her work using choline after the fact in fetal animals. Try to ameliorate some of the neurodevelopmental problems associated with prenatal ethanol exposure. Charlie proposes also to, Charlie, you can talk about your stuff in a moment. I wanted to say that I spoke with Kathy Sulik, who has been working on a small animal imaging unit and has interesting preliminary data with prenatal ethanol exposure and development, and can do not just simple structural imaging, but also diffusion tensor imaging, which allows her to look at white matter tracks. That seems to me to be a potentially interesting link with the rest of the project, and Kathy was very excited about the prospect of being able to pursue that work in collaboration with the rest of the consortium. So that's another potential basic science project. We have as one of the major challenges in the clinical portion of the consortium the issue of biomarkers and how to expand and integrate a biomarker component with the rest of the consortium is also another interesting question that we should discuss, but that's certainly been one of the shortfalls of some of our projects, which is that we're just never good enough with self.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. I went over the waterfall there. For so that biomarkers is certainly something we want to pursue, and where basic work can inform the clinical projects. Whether or not we want to do that as a basic science project or just to simply get an experienced person who does biomarkers to help coordinate doing that work in a clinical setting is something also to discuss. So that's the opening summary, and I would just ask Charlie if he wants to give us a succinct summary of what he's got in mind for his own work.
Yeah, and basically I've sort of just been commenting in broad strokes, even in my formal reply to you, but I think there's one major question that I would raise from the outset, which is, from Michael's presentation, there are clearly some basic science projects that get put together and submitted as defined projects, and I think there are at least two areas in which, and perhaps three, but certainly two areas in which I think the basic science might fit together better with the clinical projects by coming in as a translational aim within the context of that other defined clinical project. And one of those is biomarkers, where clearly a biomarker strategy has to be taken, which is really getting the tissues from the human populations that we have access to, as well as having the basic science component. I think if they go together under a single aim within a clinical project, it would work better. And the other is a nutritional or a project that might be an interventional approach, where if there is a large project that evaluates nutritional manipulations in clinical settings, perhaps a translational aim that complements that would work fairly well in that context. Whether that would be the choline intervention that Jennifer's interested in, or whether it would be something else and have choline go forward as a separate project needs to be, I think, evaluated.
Yeah.
My main interest right now, and Fung Het needs to talk separately, I think, for me, is that I think one of the things that we might want to do, and this would have to probably be as a project, although it doesn't really fit the project description, is I think we should really consider developing some kind of what I would call a high-throughput behavioral and maybe a neuropathological approach to, and we can do this in the context of a collaborative arrangement, I think, where we can really set up some kind of animal model screening process to start that's dedicated toward evaluating some of these potential therapeutic compounds, rather than doing it sort of on the cheap. And I think that's something I would be interested in talking about further as well.
I would look at Jennifer maybe on. Jennifer?
Here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. The choline project, I think, is interesting just because the preliminary data suggests that it may be a post-exposure intervention that can be helpful. There are a whole slew of questions that involve nutrition that have to do with pathogenesis and prevention rather than intervention.
Right.
Right.
And I think that it would be great if we could find somebody to address those. I'm familiar with some work that's going on regarding cholesterol, and whether we want to invite some of the people who are doing that work to be part of this or not is something to consider. The fundamental idea is that cholesterol is an important modifier of protein interactions with the cell membrane, and that there are some proteins that are very important in development whose ability to signal is impeded if there isn't a cholesterol component added, and that some of those proteins, when they're not signaling normally, produce some of the changes that have been observed in fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. So that there's an evolving story there. I'm not saying that we should necessarily grab onto it, but that's a potential avenue where there's a link between a basic science preclinical project and some of the clinical work that's ongoing. There's always been this question of why some of our populations have such a high prevalence of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, or FAS, and it's certainly been observed that malnutrition is prevalent in some of those areas, and it's been speculated that it may play an important role, and certainly cholesterol deficiency is one of the elements of malnutrition. There are probably many others as well. This is just one particular link from a fundamental nutritional state that ties into a pathophysiological mechanism that's critical for development.
I think you've touched on something that can get back to the way this the basic sciences could be structured as well, and that is, if we think about an integrative project oriented approach where we have something that might be trying to prevent the pathogenesis during the exposure phase, and another like Jennifer's choline work that is more of a treatment kind of approach,
right,
in the animal model.
What may come of this is that we may not identify a particular nutrient as being deficiency of a particular nutrient as being causal necessarily, or synergistic in causing FAS, but it may turn out that in the right host, that particular nutritional element is necessary because of some other factor, like a genetic factor, that makes a particular signaling pathway susceptible to nutritional deficiency.
Michael or Ken, does Project PASS contain a nutritional evaluation?
Yes.
Are they saving like umbilical cord or anything like that?
They're saving placentas. In terms of umbilical cord, apart from the placenta, I don't recall. I don't believe so.
Michael, do you think that looking at trying to establish nutritional status through that?
You can do a lot, actually, with placenta. It would be awfully nice just to get maternal blood during pregnancy.
And PASS does have that.
They were doing that. That's right.
Yeah, they have that.
I mean, I think that's a key component. Cord blood would be interesting. Blood from the newborn would be interesting, but I think those start to become more complicated. If they are collecting maternal blood, we could learn a lot, and we might not have to get fancy either. And having that maternal blood is also helpful in any biomarker study that happens to use a blood component.
Well, one of the reasons I brought up cord is that group, Chicago Life Sciences, who developed the meconium assay.
Yeah.
They have a new assay now, looking at the guy in Switzerland, whatever he measures. They're now doing that from cord. And they think that it's very, very sensitive and reliable as a biomarker.
This is phosphatidylethanolamine or something like that?
Yeah. And they need about a 6-inch section of cord, though. So not an insignificant amount of.
Yeah.
So I just thought of just as an idea of trying to integrate all of that into one.
I mean, basically what we had talked about, how we had structured our thinking originally, was to be well integrated with the rest of the consortium. There were three themes: diagnosis and biomarkers, with biomarkers as an enhancement for diagnosis, mechanisms and therapeutics, with an understanding of mechanisms enhancing therapeutics, and developmental modifiers, be they nutritional or genetic, and interventions as a third theme. And it would, we don't have to spread out projects across all three themes, but each of those themes ties in nicely with the rest of the consortium. Ultimately, postnatal interventions are going to be informed by what we learn in animals, and even prenatal interventions, prevention, is going to require populations for validating findings in animal studies and showing that they really do have relevance to human populations. And diagnosis and biomarkers is one of the, diagnosis is certainly one of the main goals of the consortium, and finding ways to improve on the history and have some objective marker of drinking during pregnancy is critical to being able to move the field forward. So I think all three of those areas are ripe for exploration.
And the nice thing about postnatal treatments is that can be applied to the translational approach probably the fastest.
Absolutely. What's great about choline and what's great about nutrition as a prenatal diagnostic and maybe therapeutic element is that they're all simple, and they don't involve necessarily the long FDA process or a similar process of very expensive testing that you can take, you know, a population with malnutrition and make nutritional replacement and intervention as was targeted for the Moscow group. You can do it, though, more formally, looking for something more specific than just giving people vitamin pills.
Michael, is a folic acid being considered?
You know, I would include folic acid along with everything else. I think folic acid obviously has special significance for studies of development, but I don't know that what we're seeing is folic acid deficiency per se. But folic acid, people are rarely deficient in one vitamin, and folic acid may be contributing. So there will be an opportunity to measure folic acid in the mothers.
Yeah, because of the involvement of folic acid in folate in the biosynthetic pathways to methionine and S-adenosyl methionine, and that impact in terms of epigenetics, I think you have to consider it in terms of any birth defect until you rule it out.
Yeah. But I wouldn't isolate any of these elements.
Right.
Well,
cholesterol remains very interesting just because of some of the overlaps with Smith-Lemli-Opitz syndrome and some of the data that are being generated about cholesterol as a protein modifier for signaling in some of the developmentally important signaling pathways, like hedgehog.
Well, I'm wondering if a preliminary basic science project then basically is to look at the nutritional status in the offspring and the mother.
I think
studies were done a long time ago, and it was with animal studies and not showing very much.
I think that what we may be seeing is two variables. It may be that what we have in the States is what you get when people are reasonably well-nourished. What we have in Western Cape Province is what you get when you have a population that drinks and isn't so well-nourished. maybe they drink more also. It's not clear that that's the sole reason for the higher prevalence. But that type of information is obtainable in the clinical population.
And how much do we know about the nutritional status in the Western Cape? I mean, is that something that is there?
Well, that's being studied.
Mm-hmm.
But put it this way, we know by observation that it's poor.
I know that it's poor.
Well, Phil May has data on food types of intake, because we had asked them to go back and see if they could calculate choline intakes. But besides, you know, the intake, there's this fetal demand for choline. So you could be taking in a reasonable amount and still be deficient in it maternally. The fetus might be good. But I think it's an opportunity to look at, without picking out a single nutritional component, is to try to establish what the nutritional status of that mother is and the offspring when it's born. And I think that Tina Chambers had the guy from... Carl Keene from Davis, you know, trying to make recommendations on supplements. And maybe that was premature to try to recommend what to supplement without knowing what they were deficient in.
Or you just use a broad supplement.
Well, they were doing micronutrient supplements, I think.
Yeah, that may be getting ahead of the game, though, because, you know, a person who has protein-calorie malnutrition is going to be deficient in multiple
everything
biochemical pathways.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things in my former life... 30 years ago, you know, I was involved in a program project on protein-calorie malnutrition, and you know, I'm not sure that alcohol has been overlaid on that as a factor properly yet. In that, you really have to give animals, if you're doing an animal model, you have to have those prospective dams eating these 6% or 8% casein diets for 5 weeks or so before most of the adaptations have really resolved.
Yeah.
Before you start being concerned about what, you know, what's the effect of the malnutrition. And I would suggest that if this is really a question of interest, I mean, if what we're seeing is an interactive effect of for example, protein-calorie malnutrition and alcohol, binge-like alcohol consumption in the Western Cape, I'm not sure we've got the animal data that mimics that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the only data I know is Sandy Warner's.
Yeah, and they just started the manipulations like a week or two before, if I remember it right.
Right, but protein restriction
exacerbated, and a lot of it was due, a lot of it could be explained by differences in the alcohol levels that were achieved, too, because of absorption and that sort of thing, because the blood alcohol levels were higher in the low-protein diets.
There is a literature looking at thiamine deficiency and its interaction with alcohol and how that can potentiate some of the neurological problems. And that's just thiamine deficiency.
Yeah, and Ed knows that work. That's Langley's work and others.
That's right, Phil Langley.
Well, I guess I would endorse the idea that at least one of the things we consider is some kind of nutritional project in an animal model. But I think we have to go back to the beginning and establish the animal models again. And decide what it is that is important to consider in this. And I think Carl Keene and Tina ought to be directly involved in those discussions too.
I think if we did that, it would be very important to stitch together that project with a clinical project, because I'm suspecting that reviewers would not find this exciting enough.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You'd have to make the case in some extraordinarily convincing way to have people fund a project today on a new animal model and the interaction of protein-calorie malnutrition or other nutrients.
I wasn't necessarily implying that this was a basic science project that should be done in an animal model.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of this, I mean, to understand how it interacts, malnutrition and alcohol, might require an animal model, but I think that most of this information is available in a human population.
And if it is, that's the way it should go.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring up the project that you mentioned for Feng Zhao about the facial morphology, and then integrating that with Kathy Sulik's.
Yeah.
That's a crossing between the craniofacial and nervous systems?
Yeah, and bring it in not only brain, but then into behavior as well, because I see two parallel investigations going on in the human and in the animal doing exactly the same thing. And so I think that's I think it's a good project that has good translation, is immediately checked with the data that we already have or will collect, and adds a really interesting component with small animal imaging that fits in with the imaging that's going on, including DTI. So, I mean, that fits a nice theme of improved diagnosis all the way around the spectrum.
The challenge in that one is that you'd really want to run the animals through, well, I mean, one of them is prenatal. I guess maybe you could have them born and then ship them off for facial morphology. Maybe that's possible, but they're at such a distance.
No, I mean, well, why couldn't, yeah, all right, I see what you mean.
Because what Kathy does is in vivo, and then
what age?
She does the anatomy afterwards to correlate with developmental studies.
But how about if we set up a facial imaging acquisition thing there?
That might work.
I mean,
that's a good idea.
For animals?
Well, she does mice.
Mm-hmm. What kind of imaging does she use? Is it MRI?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
She does sort of T1 structural imaging and diffusion tensor imaging to look at white matter bundles. She's going to be presenting something at RSA, so we'll get a better look at it then. And I asked her to set aside the 16th and the 17th so that she might be able to join us in Washington to look at this in more detail. But it might be that we want to sit down with her during the RSA meeting and just have some preliminary discussions so we understand exactly what she's doing and can all get on the same page.
I think the idea of merging several approaches in a developmental context that parallels what you can do in the human populations is a good idea. I think however that gets amalgamated is something that ought to be a priority, though.
Well, I think it's important. I think it's saleable, and I think that in terms of progress, reasonable progress was made during the initial grant period on the facial imaging stuff. And I think now it's just a matter of trying to add in the brain data with it.
Yeah, and this is a great way to do it.
You know, I'd like to see Charlie do it in the rat.
We don't have the small animal imaging capabilities here yet. So.
You can do a video.
Well, I'm just wondering where people said that the rat was a lousy model to produce the facial dysmorphology, whether or not the camera would see it differently.
Yeah. That could be done.
Yeah.
And definitely could be done. And probably could be done in time for the renewal.
Can we step back for a moment and just see if we can conceptualize certain numbers of projects, for better or for worse? There's the Miller project with my group on medications development, working on crystallization of L1. There's Feng Zhou's project on facial morphology, possibly with or distinct from Kathy Sulick. There's Jennifer Thomas's animal studies. What else do we have?
Well, I think I'd like to keep alive the idea of an animal human approach to undernutrition.
Okay.
Interactive undernutrition.
I see obvious PIs for the first three. Is that something that you would want to undertake, Charlie?
I would do it collaboratively, you know, if it's going to be part of a if there's interest on the human side, I could do it that way.
How's the behavior assessment?
Yes.
Well, the behavioral assessments right now structurally fit within other projects, but I don't think we want to have just like a core. One of the things that I raised was a possibility of really high throughput behavioral cores, but it doesn't sound like we want that because it's not, you know, that's not how this renewal should be structured. I mean, it needs to be
project.
It needs to be hypothesis driven, and it needs to be, you know, targeted for specific parallels. So it could be within the context of another project, like a neurodevelopmental project that includes facial imaging, developmental brain imaging, and behavioral outcome. But I don't think it stands alone by itself.
I'm going to add to this the possibility of inviting in someone who is working on cholesterol or one of these other areas in developmental signaling molecules, just to keep in there, because I think that has a potential nice intersection with the rest of the consortium.
Yeah, and I hate to put Jennifer on the spot, Patricia doesn't know I'm going to ask this, but her choline grant is funded, and what would be distinct about this so that it wouldn't be seen as a duplicate effort unless it was done in...
I missed your last comment, Ed.
Unless it was done in humans. If it's an animal study and she has funding for three or four more years, I think one of the issues we have to really be concerned about is will the reviewers see this as kind of a little double dipping?
Right.
Or at least derivative.
One way is integrating with some of the behaviors that you're doing, Charlie, like the eye blink conditioning, which is possible.
And we've seen that as a possibility. But I think what I would suggest, and I don't know how much enthusiasm there would be for this, but a nice way to make it non-derivative and make it extend to humans in a better way is to consider doing it in the sheep model, where we're now developing the iBlink work there in a small grant. And depending on what I see this summer, it may be quite a reasonable model. And it's closer to the human in terms of the exposure, in terms of an in utero model.
So seeing it extending into different species is a distinct feature.
And it certainly would be.
You're doing the sheep work there in Indiana?
No, it's going on in A&M.
Oh, with TMCOD.
Right. So that, I mean, that's a possibility if there was interest and if the consortium didn't think it was, you know, getting into waters we don't want to tread. But
I think that's something to consider. I see it just because Tim's work didn't fare well the first time. I see a potential vulnerability in that it still could be considered derivative. It takes you one step closer to humans, but a reviewer might say, if choline is otherwise a relatively safe substance, why not just go directly to humans?
Right. And I could, you know, I could see the case made for that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no reason why, you know, something like that could be integrated into a project somewhere, and if Jennifer would agree to it, tied to her R01.
You mean if the UO1 doesn't get funded, she loses her RO?
No, that wasn't really what I was thinking of.
Okay. I mean, we're going to have, you know, creative funding mechanisms under the challenging circumstances of the NIH funding environment. That would be one, is the double or nothing approach.
Right. Well, I mean, clearly what I think the UO, what the choline work needs is not more demonstration, but more identification of how it's working mechanistically. And if there are ways to pursue that through collaborative means and others, that makes it non-derivative.
Jennifer, in your choline work, how much of it is mechanistic, the funded work?
We'll be looking at cholinergic receptors at that level. But not necessarily getting into additional mechanisms.
And are you
consequences rather than
yeah. So are you in a position, do you have data that can take you into a second direction looking at mechanisms? Because that has a potential tie into one of the main themes of mechanisms and therapeutics, and certainly the more you understand how something works, the better you can refine therapies.
I mean, that certainly is a possibility. I think that once we know more of the consequences at the neural level, it'll help to guide some of those mechanistic questions. But that would be something that would be distinct from what I currently have funding for.
Yeah.
But it may not necessarily be at the neural level.
Right.
And that's, you know, the key issue. Mm-hmm. There's a recent paper on choline. A recent review on choline in epigenetics, and still, you know, at those early stages, that's still a potential mechanism,
mm-hmm.
which would be totally independent of the nervous system.
So, yeah, I think that there definitely would be directions to take it that would veer away from what I'm currently investigating.
You know, and to not to get too distracting here, but I think there's two things we really haven't talked about much in detail, and that is, it's come up, but we haven't talked about it, and that's how do we fit the genetics into this effort? And Ken keeps reminding us that a big concern at IEEE is the epigenetic modifications, and how do we fit those into what we're talking about now? I mean, do we want to have some kind of basic science project that is explicitly addressing those opportunities that Ed noted in the email some time ago from the FAS summary, in which epigenetic modifications are very much highlighted, and do we want to put that into a portion of this consortium? I mean, I'm not a person that can really talk about it because I don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
I think to get at things like hypo or hypermethylation of DNA is going to be very, very basic, and it's going to be at risk in a way that crystallography of L1 is at risk, which is that it doesn't have an immediate link to the consortium, although it has an important conceptual link. To do those sorts of studies in humans, I mean, you can do, if you have some information about where to look, you can look for polymorphisms in human populations. I don't know that our populations are going to be large enough to do linkage analysis or some kind of screening for predetermining factors, but we don't have anyone at hand can do that, and I don't know that we've solved the problem of removing materials from these countries to do that kind of work.
Right.
So that I think you would be looking at very basic studies on modifications of DNA or DNA expression, RNA and protein expression that somehow might influence the outcomes of drinking or might be a consequence of drinking, and those have a more tenuous relationship to the themes of the consortium in that they would have to probably do a lot of groundwork for some period of time before they could begin to relate. I agree with you that it's important, and I think that anybody who's doing mechanistic work ultimately has in mind, if we identify pathways that are important or particular molecules that seem to be critical, then an obvious next step is to look for polymorphisms in populations. And that's a rationale for doing a particular piece of work and tells you what the next step would be. But it might be the next step outside the period of funding.
Mm-hmm.
So we have five or six themes or projects, and it's conceivable that, you know, Kathy has enough work on in hers. We'll have to hear from her that hers might stand alone but relate in a common aim, for example, but not the entire project, with the work that Feng Zhou is proposing. So we should identify a PI for each one and begin to think of how we will flesh these out.
Is Kathy's do you know what time points or what age ranges she's able to do?
I've only talked briefly with her, but I think she was looking at gestational day 6, 7, and 8, which is really tiny.
It's actually
7, 8, and 9, something like that.
It's the beginning of the neural relations.
Yes.
Very early.
Very early, and I haven't seen her data. So I'm going to be speaking with her in the next week.
Yeah, because
try to learn more about it. But
you wouldn't even expect DTI to show anything then.
Yeah, that's way early.
It is.
She's not treating them then, and then looking.
I think she's treating them and looking at development sequentially and non-invasively and following what happens over time.
Okay.
Oh, she's looking postnatally, but treated prenatally.
I think that she's looking. But I'm not sure. I don't want to speculate because my conversation with her was pretty brief. I was just looking for interest and to get a sense of what she was doing. I'll get much more information on that and feed it back to you. Maybe we can.
Because if she is looking at older animals, I mean, Elizabeth Sal's data said that she might be able to take the facial measurements right off of the MRI scan.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Feng has developed this, and he should follow through on it.
Great.
I didn't want to cut him out by suggesting that the brain, you know, and doing this in collaboration with Kathy, I think that they can integrate the two of them in two projects.
Right.
With an overlapping aim.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Example.
And in Feng's case, you know, it would be relatively easy to merge the developmental analysis, including facial imaging, with brain and behavioral analysis later on.
Yeah.
I mean, because we can work that out here.
Right.
What I will try to do in the coming days before RSA is speak at greater length with Kathy and then see if perhaps we can arrange a three-way call and flesh this out a little bit further. And
we could even, Michael, if you know, you could do it earlier than RSA, but we could probably just as easily do it at RSA.
We might do it at RSA.
Because I don't know that, you know, 2 weeks before it makes that much more difference for us.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of how to focus our thinking because RSA tends to get busy and
right.
It would be.
Michael will have no time there. He will
little time.
You're not still running it, are you, Michael?
I'm afraid I am.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Will walk away more tired than you have ever been in your life at the end of that week?
You know what? Compared to what I'm doing this week, it's going to be a vacation.
Well, then maybe a call would be good, and you can set it up to your convenience, and I'll match it.
Let me just get more information. It won't hurt us, and it'll give us an opportunity to think in advance of RSA so that we can go through second generation thinking on this. And then hopefully by the time we meet in July, we'll be able to refine this into a project.
Well, I'll just point out, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but the model that Fung is using is the prenatal exposure models and the imaging work that he's done with that is very different, I suspect, from what Kathy's doing if she's using her usual models. So there will be differences between the two approaches as they currently exist, and is my guess.
Yes, but we'll see.
We don't know. Yeah, we don't know what age.
One of the models that Kathy has started to use is a drinking model.
Mm-hmm.
And she is going to be showing some work that I'm familiar with, looking at limb reduction defects and ocular defects. Actually, I think she showed the ocular defects already from fluid deprivation and re-exposure. And then they have this peak of drinking on one day, and they produce pretty reliable defects in ocular development. So I'm not sure which one she's using, but it may not be the Webster model.
No, well, there will be differences, but they may not be as large as what I was suggesting. And but there are some things that I think need to be worked out through smaller group discussions, I think.
I agree,
yeah.
Including this kind of technical.
Right.
So there's Miller-Charnas, Feng Zhou, Sulik, Jennifer Thomas.
And I would be tied to Feng's.
Something, you would be tied to Feng?
Yeah, that'd be the best way to do it.
Okay.
And Feng would be PI.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
And whether or not we invite another person in who's working on one of these links between developmental signaling and nutrition.
Well, see, I think Jennifer's project or whoever's project should be more broadly based than colon. I think, there's those new data on vitamin B3 was protective.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there might be lots of things that enhance the choline, whether that's a specific effect in mitigating alcohol damage or whether it's just a great effect, it's a good thing to take in brain development and helps everybody, is certainly debatable. But I could see a broader grant looking at the effect of various nutritional interventions, and it would be nice if that was based on known clinical deficiencies.
Yeah.
And the only other, I know it's running short of time, is that no one has mentioned anything about inviting someone in, like, for gene array studies, and whether there's any interest in that at all.
Well, that's one way to address genetics or it all depends on how you do it. It can be deadly at study sections if it's not hooked to a really well-formulated hypothesis.
Right.
So what you're thinking, Ed, though, is that there would be just a nutritional project that would include a variety of different, and as a preventative agent, giving it during the alcohol treatment or postnatal?
No, postnatal. But upon some rational data, and if we can get the data from Phil of what nutritional deficiencies he found or what they find in the first 100 kids in the PATH project, I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Well, Ed, I'll throw out a sort of a modified version of that. As the PATH project comes to as it comes to fruition with some results, this might be the kind of thing where you have to have that data before you can make the proposal for the animal model.
Yeah, it might.
And you may have to do this more as you know, some kind of later supplement or something, you know, where you come in after you know what it looks like and say, okay, now we can model it. Because you can't make the proposal until you know what it is you're going to, what manipulation you're going to try.
Right.
I don't think.
No, I agree.
On the other hand, you know, Jennifer's culling can be done, but like you said, it's still, you know, it's already funded. So, and there's a good reason for it.
All right, that's a start.
Okay.
I think we did well. Let's do some follow-up offline and have something more when we meet again.
All right, well, we'll talk next week on the regular conference call.
Sounds good.
Oh, that's right. And Fung and I can talk in the next day or two and sort of work some of this out, too.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Ed, I'll go ahead and give you a quick call.
All right.
Are you at your office?
I'm in my office.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Just seemed it.